The College of GPs says a nationwide shortage of pulse oximeters is an example of the need for a clear pathway on how community COVID cases should be managed. Pulse oximeters measure the amount of oxygen in the blood, and while inexpensive, they're an important piece of equipment for doctors managing COVID patients who are isolating at home. They've been described as the ventilator of community care. Some pharmacies and online retailers are running low on the devices. College of GPs Medical Director Dr. Brian Betty says the Ministry of Health and some GP practices around the country have been stockpiling pulse oximeters, though it's not known how many have been accumulated. He says GPs are very concerned that the country is reaching a tipping point where COVID will become endemic in the community, but there are no guidelines yet on how those patients should be cared for. Dr. Betty joins us now. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Lynn.
Can we start with a better definition than I gave of what a pulse oximeter is and why it's so important?
Yeah, look, so a pulse oximeter is a very small piece of equipment that goes across the finger, and it basically measures how much oxygen is in the blood. So you can get a percentage reading which tells you, yep, the patient is oxygenating well, oxygen's flowing around the body, that's good. However, if there's a problem and the lungs aren't working properly and oxygen levels start to drop, it gives you an early warning that that's what's happening. Now, the thing about COVID is most cases are mild to moderate and don't have a problem, and there'll be a mild flu or a cold, which can be managed at home. However, for some patients, which may have comorbidities, may be elderly or other conditions, the lungs can suddenly start to stress and oxygen doesn't flow through to the bloodstream. And this can happen very quickly around days 8 to 11. And one of the ways of telling that's starting to occur, or the very early warning signs, is using these pulse oximeters to see what the blood oxygen concentration is. And it's almost like an early warning sign that actually further intervention may be required, hospital may be required. So it's a very, very important piece of equipment to say there may be further intervention that is now required at this point.
Now, they're not the most expensive piece of kit?
No, they're not. They're relatively inexpensive. But one of the problems that has arisen worldwide because of the amount of COVID that is now globally present, and a lot of these COVID people with COVID are being managed in the community, is there's a global shortage of these pulse oximeters. The second problem is not all pulse oximeters are created equal, so you need to make sure you've got the right type or the right brand. So there has been these global supply issues, which has led to some shortages in supply of pulse oximeters. So the ministry has been active in this area over the last couple of months in trying to source pulse oximeters so there's a national store of them so they can be used if we do move into an endemic state with COVID and is widespread throughout the community. And a number of PHOs and GP practices have been trying to buy them up. But at times there has been shortages, and that's been very obvious.
So the way this would work ideally is that infected patients would be given one of these oximeters and what they could video conference with their GP?
Yeah, so one of the models of care that's been looked at, and there's work now going on what this looks like in the community, and this has been trialled overseas and worked very successfully, is there's an initial assessment, the patient is at home, and then there's a medical practitioner or nurse who's actually video conferencing or direct liaising with the patient on a daily basis in a telehealth way. Now, in order to do that successfully, the patient will often be given a pulse oximeter so they can take their own reading every day or twice a day, whatever's required, depending on the stream, what we call the stream they're in. And through doing that, you can actually monitor what's going on remotely so that if there's a problem that's arising, intervention can occur. So those guidelines and those pathways are now being worked on from a national basis, and that work started 2 weeks ago. And those pathways are now being formulated to start to roll out across the country in preparation for the potential for endemic spread of COVID.
You're aware that the Ministry of Health has been stockpiling them pretty quietly, I would have to say, but how many potentially would be needed?
Look, I mean, I suppose the answer to that question is quite difficult at this point because it depends on what happens with our vaccination rates and how quickly COVID starts to spread outside of Auckland or around the country or within Auckland itself. So look, we just to give an example off the top of my head, you know, if in Wellington we had 20 COVID cases, look, you don't have a very big resource. However, if there was suddenly 1,000 COVID cases in the community, then you've got a big requirement for these pieces of equipment. So it's really, really comes down to, and this is one of the key things about the situation at the moment, is what percentage of the population is vaccinated, because essentially this is really going to be a problem of the unvaccinated population where this is probably going to need to be used.
Should we have seen the shortage coming given what's been happening overseas?
I think the shortage developed relatively quickly, to be fair. I think the ideas about how to treat COVID have really moved on quite remarkably over the last 12 months. It's been a very rapidly moving field. And this idea of managing COVID remotely in the community by general practice and general practice teams or other modalities is relatively new. And it's come out of the experience, especially in Canada, where this became an issue. And what they saw in Canada was very quickly COVID started to overwhelm the hospital system, that they couldn't cope with it. It started to overwhelm the MIQ system. It flowed into the community where they trialled a central monitoring system, and then it very quickly flowed into general practice to look after their own patients. And I suppose that's one of the things here at the moment with what's happening in Auckland and how widespread this will potentially become, is how quickly this, and we're already starting to see it, is tipping into the community and into general practice. So we do need to be on top of what's happening here in terms of the guidelines and the access to equipment.
Well, another issue here, of course, is that we're talking about trying to help our most vulnerable in communities where life is already very difficult, overcrowded housing, issues with internet connectivity, of course, and we're talking about video conferencing here. So there are lots of questions about whether, even if we have enough of these pulse oximeters, that we can make it work in the way you've described.
This is just one component of what is actually quite a complex situation, and you've tapped into it ideally, where you've got overcrowding, where you've got poverty, and people don't have access to internet connectivity or even phone in some instances. One of the things we are saying very, very clearly to the government and the ministry is those problems need to be solved. So there is a lot of work obviously going on with the providers in South Auckland and the communities to look at those issues and what we call the wraparound services, so that you do have access to phone and internet, that if you are home isolating, that you do have access to support in terms of food and maybe social needs. So that is actually a really, really important component of what actually goes on, and certainly needs to be thought of in terms of what's been rolled out or what's been planned. So all these issues are interconnected. And I suppose one of my comments about this would be, what COVID has done essentially, I think, has shown up some of the problems we do have in our health system in terms of disparity and inequity, and certainly some of the problems in terms of delivering healthcare to populations that may be disadvantaged and may be inequitable. And these problems actually come to the fore, but certainly they need to be thought about and solved by both the government and the ministry and the DHBs in terms of the rollout of this. And general practice and GPs need to be supported.
Brian, we're already getting texts from listeners saying that there are lots of pulse oximeters available on Trade Me, for example. Should people be concerned, do their research, if they're thinking about buying one?
Look, I wouldn't be plunging into that, to be honest with you, because, again, there's a range of pulse oximeters that are available, and they're not all created equal, and some are quite inaccurate in terms of what they do, and you do need to know how to use them. As I said, we're confident that those patients who have COVID and are going to be managed in the community and are going to be provided with the necessary equipment for that to occur. And certainly that is one of the things that is front of mind in terms of producing these guidelines and what actually happens. So, in terms of them being available, yeah, you do have to be slightly careful about which one you get, but I wouldn't necessarily been rushing out to buy them at this point.
Because we're hearing from people also who are mentioning that they are smart watchers. Have this capacity as well. Would it be the same suggestion? Just don't rush into it and don't rely on it too heavily.
Look, I mean, yeah, no, so smartwatches and this technology is around now and people do have them. I mean, one of the problems we get into with these new technologies is there's a range of them. In a lot of cases, they're not particularly regulated in terms of their accuracy or what they actually do. So they may give an indication, which is fine. But again, the use is very limited to certain circumstances, and that's the other thing we need to be careful about here. So they are used for a particular reason, and that is monitoring certain patients with COVID in the community. So it's quite a defined area you want to use them in this particular instance. And again, yeah, some of these that are around are in fact relatively inaccurate. So you do have to be careful about that.
Brian, you've said that you believe that we are at a tipping point. I mean, up until now, COVID cases have been under the care of MIQ and regional health authorities. But things are about to change. We know in less than an hour we're going to hear the framework that the government is suggesting. What pathways, what guidance will you be listening for that do you believe that our GPs will need because they're going to be having an even bigger role in the future?
Well, look, I think that's what we're about to see. So, the situation in Auckland at the moment is concerning. There's certainly huge pressure on the MIQs and the public health services. We're starting to see patients flow out into general practice at this point, but before they're picked up by a community team. But we expect if this continues that that may flow directly into general practice. We don't know what that looks like in the rest of the country at the moment. There's obviously risk involved here. We don't know what the absolute numbers are going to be at this point. What we do need from the government and the ministry is absolute clarity about what the way forward looks like in terms of as we move from elimination to living with COVID and COVID potentially becoming an endemic that is flowing around the community. What are the timeframes for opening up? What do we need in terms of vaccination rates to make that potentially okay to do? And the third part, which is really, really important, what is the support that the ministry and the government is going to give to general practice in terms of guidance, resource, funding to make sure that this is adequately managed in the community going forward? So we are looking for clarity.
And it's set against this backdrop of a primary healthcare sector that we know is under considerable pressure.
Look, I mean, what we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months is a sector, a general practice that has really stepped up to the mark. It's continued to provide business as usual in terms of what was already a very stretched sector in terms of demand and workforce. On top of this, we've had the whole infection control issues that have had to go on with the move to telehealth. We've had vaccinations going on in practices and swabbing in practices. And now this COVID in the community is coming in over the top. So yeah, we need to acknowledge we have a very, very stretched general practice workforce that has stepped up to the mark, and I think have done an incredible job in what's been a very stressed situation. But this level of additional work adds obviously to the pressure that general practice is under in providing what they normally provide. And it's certainly something that needs to be recognised by the government and the ministry in terms of the pressures that are actually out there in the sector at this point.
Thank you so much for your time this morning. That's College of GPs Medical Director, Dr. Brian Betty.